the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, welcoming you back ahead of our Beltway Blitz.
We are brought to you by the law firm of Condor and Morad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Beltway Blitz on the NFL and the Commanders, and we just got some news on the Commanders moments ago. In fact, let's go over to Toby. We don't need to do a big breaking news or anything, but Toby was just telling me this. So, Tobes, tell the people what you just heard about my guy, Ale Kaho.
He's on the initial 53. We got the list of cuts. He wasn't on it. So, he's a part of the initial 53.
Undrafted free agent, UCLA, Alabama. If you have a great preseason, you can make the roster. Love stories like that. Corey Brooks, by the way, the wide receiver we've been curious about, the UDFA out of Louisville, was actually among those released. So, we'll get you the final roster coming up in the Blitz in moments. But let's start things off on the diamond. Our buddy Dave Jagler at Yankee Stadium, where the Nats and the Yanks are tangling again tonight. 7:05 first pitch for the Nationals. Jags a little bit too little and way too late last night. 5 runs, all in the ninth. Nats lose 10-5. What did you make of the ballgame?
Well, I mean, to me, the big takeaway was for Brad Lord, you know, big stage. He had really passed every test, his first rough outing since going back into the rotation, and really the roughest outing of the year. He'd given up no more than 4 runs in any outing, either as a starter or reliever, and gave up 5 in one inning in that final frame. So, you know, he was due for maybe a rough one. That's what happened. So the Nationals did their best to try to come back late. They've been very good at putting up crooked numbers when games are lopsided. Unfortunately, you wish there was a little more earlier in the game. They had some base running issues that took them out of some chances. But I would think that Lord would bounce back his next start when he's back on the bump on the next homestand, because he's been very good just about every time out. Was not the case last night. Yankees got to him, but that's a lineup that can hit home runs, and they were able to do that last night.
Jags dropped 3 in a row, but albeit to very quality opponents here, 2 in Philadelphia, then last night to the Yankees. But in general, over the last, I think it's 15 or 16 games, right around 500, as this group kind of continues to scrap, what are you seeing?
Well, I think this stretch was a real, you know, a real test, because as you talked about quality opponents, I mean, you had Phillies, Mets, Phillies, Yankees. So you're talking about, you know, the top two teams in the NL East and one of the top teams in the American League East. And they split a series with the Phillies, won a series from the Mets, and, you know, had a chance maybe to win a series in Philly, took one game, rallying against one of the best closers in the league. And obviously we'll see what happens over these next two. So I think this team is playing a good stretch. You know, they're a team that has a lot of guys who are fighting for spots. I mean, Miguel Cairo is rotating different outfielders, you know, daily basis, whether one guy's the DH, one guy's on the bench, 3 other, 4 other guys are playing. So guys are fighting for their spots and trying to show that they're worthy of being part of the plan going forward. So this is a very motivated team right now. And so far, you know, you're seeing some good things. You're seeing some young mistakes, in particular on the base paths. But overall, I think you have to be happy with how things have gone here in this very tough stretch.
Dave Jagler, you'll hear him on the call with Charlie Slows tonight right here on 106.7 The Fan. Jags, Dalen Lyles out of the lineup for a second straight game. We've seen a lot of this where Robert Hassel will miss 2 in a row, Brady House will miss 2 in a row. I don't really get it at this point. I know Jacob Young hit a grand slam last night, and I'm a JY guy. But for me, the lineup every night should start with Wood, Cruz, Lyle, Hassel, like the key young guys being getting at bats in a lost season where the team is terrible, and then figure everything else out. Like, what am I missing?
Well, you are actually missing a key point regarding Dalen Lyle. This is actually going to be the third consecutive game that he's missed. And Dalen Lyle was under the weather yesterday. He was upset stomach, was vomiting, and so was unable to be in the starting lineup the last 2 days. So I'm assuming that's a carryover to today as to why he's not in there for a third straight day.
So this is still from – I did actually remember seeing that he was, like, throwing up or something, but this is still that?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that was yesterday. So, okay. I mean, you know, sometimes it takes you more than 24 hours to get back feeling good. So, I mean, Dalen Lyle's been in there almost every day and has really been giving them quality at-bats. You look at the two big hits he's had in the ninth inning on the last two road trips, Carlos Estevez in Kansas City, ninth inning game winner, the game-tying hit against Duran against the Phillies on Friday – Then the stolen base, the throwing error allows them to win that game. Dalen Lyle is part of the mix. And the only reason he's not in the lineup these 3 days is because he's not feeling well. So there's no issue with playing time or any sort of situation like that. I think soon as Dalen is physically able, he's right back in there just about every day. There's been more of a rotation, honestly, between Young and Hassel. That's kind of been almost a quasi-platoon in center field. So with Lyle being down, Cruz is going to DH, and both Hassel and Young are in there tonight. So this is all kind of contingent right now on Dalen Lyle's physical well-being. As far as the third base situation, you know, House is back in there tonight. You know, Paul DeJong's been such a hot hitter. He's had his starts at second. He's had his starts at third. You know, House has kind of been trying to feel his way here. He did have a better game. He had hit some balls hard in Philly. So, hopefully maybe the days off are fewer and far between for House, although he was off last night. But again, with the outfield, that's kind of the puzzle piece every night. And again, Dalen Lyle just not feeling up to it. So I'd hope he'd be back in there tomorrow for the series finale feeling better.
Jags, thank you as always. Have a great call this evening.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys back home. Big Labor Day weekend homestand. Hope we'll see you guys out there.
I look forward to it. I will be there Friday night.
Sounds good.
Appreciate you, buddy. Hit that NFL sounder, please. Alrighty, John Oran, Puck News, joins us to talk about the NFL. Really some TV rights when it comes to the NFL. John, who's mad at who right now? Give us the latest.
Oh, everybody's mad at everybody right now. I'm most interested in who's mad at who in college football. I know that you asked about the NFL, but how about Ohio State and Barstool Sports, David Portnoy? That's a great
to that,
story,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so the latest there is Ohio State's basically saying, no, we didn't ban him. You guys are silly geese. What happened?
Basically, David Portnoy said that he was banned from going inside of Ohio State. Ohio State's AD said that he wasn't banned. And what this basically is to bring it back to media, Portnoy is about to start a career as an on-air talent for Fox Sports on their college football pregame show. This Saturday happens to be Lee Corso's last game on College Game Day on ESPN. And all anybody's talking about, at least on my timeline, is Ohio State and Dave Portnoy. And so Dave Portnoy is creating a lot of controversy that's going to guarantee some tune-in for Fox's pregame show. This is exactly why Fox went out and hired Portnoy and why Fox ended up cozying up to Barstool.
I was going to say, isn't this kind of the way these companies are trending? Is it's the clicks and the eyeballs and the social media presence. Like these are not traditional Big J journalists or even traditional analysts at the desk. You know, I think College Game Day had, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, it was like a famous Peloton instructor that they hired. And, you've got Portnoy. Like, I think that's what we're doing, right? We're getting personalities from other realms.
Yeah, and College Game Day, of course, has Pat McAfee as sort of that's their version of Dave Portnoy over there. But that's what's so interesting about Lee Corso to me is that Lee Corso his whole career has been much more as like an entertainer than it has been sort of a X's and O's analyst on set. So the whole idea about college football pregame shows is all about the entertainment and getting crowds into it much more so than trying to decide who's going to win because of various analyses.
What will the ESPN NFL relationship look like?
That's a good question. There's really not a good answer to that right now. I can tell you that some of the things that I'm going to be taking a look at is ESPN right now. They do have a really big editorial arm, and they have an investigative unit that writes really good and tough stories about ESPN's league partners, like the NBA and the NFL, the college football. What I'm going to be looking at is to see if they still get the same amount of support as they've always gotten at ESPN, or whether that shrinks a little bit. I don't think that ESPN is going to necessarily get any better games because their relationship with the NFL. The NFL's poised to take a 10% ownership stake in ESPN. But the NFL also happens to have an ownership stake in CBS as well, which is another NFL partner. So this is the NFL sort of propping up a little bit traditional media, especially as everybody's going to streaming. And we just don't know yet. We're waiting to see how the NFL is going to treat these networks or media companies any differently.
How about this dispute? YouTube, Fox, we ended our show with this news last night that dropped that there's a carriage fight now. It seems like no matter what I have, Fox or CBS is fighting with somebody constantly. Is there any chance I'm going to miss Ohio State, Texas on Saturday?
There, you know, there's a small chance that you're going to miss it. My bet is they're going to come up with a deal right before that game. But what's unique about this is that just last week, Fox launched a direct-to-consumer app called Fox One. So if they don't come to a deal, you can download Fox One for $20. You'll be able to stream the game. And I think YouTube has said that, you know, if Fox drops its channels, they'll rebate you $10. So there are other options for you without actually getting rid of YouTube TV. But I've been covering these types of fights for literally three decades. They're going to come to an agreement. At some point, they are going to come to an agreement.
Real quick, not necessarily football related. Baseball broadcasting rights. Locally, it's still kind of up in the air. It seems like now there's maybe one contender. Well, I'd love for you to get into that. But just in general, where does baseball broadcasting rights go?
Are you talking about nationally or for the Nationals?
Yeah, local here for the Nationals, but then nationally as well.
Locally for the Nationals, I keep hearing Masson is the people I know that work for Masson sound pretty confident that they'll be able to renew a deal with the Nats, which I find to be interesting because I would think that Ted Leonsis and Monumental would be the most likely ones to get those rights. But that's still sort of up in the air to see what happens with that nationally. Fox and TBS still have the top two packages, and they're going to have them for the next 3 years going through 2028. ESPN pulled out of its package, and you're going to see Sunday Night Baseball move to NBC next season. You're going to see the wild card playoff round. That's going to move to Peacock and NBC next season. And what's most interesting is the Home Run Derby that ESPN always carried. That's heading over to Netflix. So you'll be able to watch the Home Run Derby on Netflix next year. ESPN's going to stick with baseball. They're going to have some midweek game on Wednesday night, maybe, or I'm not sure which night. I don't think baseball knows quite yet which night. And also through the ESPN app, which also launched last week, you will be able to stream out-of-market games, MLB.tv, through the ESPN app. So that's a pretty big deal for ESPN.
John, awesome. As always, good insight. Love
Thank
talking
you,
about the media and sports with you. Thank you.
I feel like I just passed my final exam, guys. Thanks.
Love it.
Yes, you did, with flying colors. Let's talk Commanders football. Our buddy Mitch Tischler. Mitch, biggest surprises on cutdown day. As far as who's in and who's out, what do you got?
Yeah, I think only keeping five receivers certainly seems to make a lot of sense, but a little surprising nonetheless to see. I think a couple of those guys will be going through to the practice squad, and they're going to be searching the waiver wire almost like they did a year ago when they found Noah Brown a couple days after cutdown day. I think Josh Johnson making it certainly is interesting, and I think the only name that kind of looked like a surprise or wasn't exactly expected was Alekejo at linebacker. So it all kind of played out, I think, how most people thought it. To me, I was a little surprised that they kept three quarterbacks. I think they could have moved on from Josh Johnson. I don't know that he's getting claimed by another team, so he would have been available there. But ultimately, you know, now that Terry's on board and looks like Noah Brown's a little healthier, pretty much as expected here.
What position group was upgraded the most on paper from this point last year to today?
Oh, offensive line. It's hard for me to think elsewhere. Corner looked better with Trey Amos out there, but offensive line, I think they upgraded at multiple positions there. I think, you know, Laremy Tunsil is obviously a massive upgrade at left tackle. Josh Connerly looks to be settling in nicely at the other one, and I think, you know, based on, you know, a lot of that position flex guys who can play elsewhere, whether it's Allegretti or Wiley, that's ultimately going to start at right guard. I think Brandon Coleman seems to be transitioning better at left guard. I think this offensive line is much upgraded, and I think that's going to help out the entire offense.
Four running backs, no surprise there. I'd say since the Brian Robinson trade had a pretty good beat on what that was going to look like. How do you feel about that room in general, though, and kind of how they'll divvy up first and second down carries?
I mean, I feel really good about the room, you know, on paper, at least to start a season. I was advocating for keeping Brian Robinson, not to get, you know, double-digit carries, but because he gives you a level of security as a guy who's, you know, done it over the course of an NFL season multiple times. There's a lot of question marks within the group. I think Jacory Kroski-Merritt, Bill, kind of gets those first carries. I think Chris Rodriguez is more of your bigger back, and then Austin Eckler kind of works in much like he did last year. And you hope that, you know, that group, including Jeremy McNichols, are able to stay healthy and make us all forget the reliability piece of what Brian Robinson gave you, and that you knew you were going to get, you know, 14 plus games a season out of him.
Give me outlooks for Ben Sinnott and Luke McCaffrey this year.
Honestly, I don't see a ton of work for either of them, really. I mean, you look at an offense and you look at the number of targets the two of them got last year, and, you know, not much changed in the tight end room. And then you added a guy like Deebo Samuel, you know, as a receiver slash gadget guy who's going to get a number of looks. And I think those looks have to come from somewhere. And Terry McLaurin should get similar number of balls, similar number of catches. I think Zach Ertz, you know, if he's able to stay healthy, is going to be a big part of this offense. And, you know, as long as Noah Brown's healthy, he's going to be your third receiver. So I don't know that Luke McCaffrey is going to get a ton of work there. Jalen Lane is going to be the guy that kind of steps in. Tight end room, pretty much the same as we saw last year. I think a similar amount of work for Bates is what's on tap.
Mitch, I'm going to sneak this in. You've kind of mentioned this, but areas where you think this roster could actually look different in 48 hours as they shop around?
Yeah, I mean, I think wide receiver might look different. I'll be interested to see what happens in the quarterback room, if they truly want to keep Josh Johnson on this 53, or if he's a short holdover. I think keeping seven linebackers is interesting and certainly, you know, leaves some room for movement. You know, are they going to maybe add another D lineman somewhere in there? You know, certainly Cleveland Farrell getting cut is a guy who, you know, we've gotten used to seeing here in Washington, and Andre Jones was a draft pick last season. So a couple of names that, you know, folks might recognize a little bit. But on the defensive side, you know, I think it looks pretty set. I just wonder if there's a couple little changes that happen offensively.
Mitch, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
See you, dude.
Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports. So the roster has been put out by the Commanders. They have released their final roster. They're not going to comment on it. Adam Peters, I believe, is addressing the media tomorrow around 3:30, right around practice time. So let's dig into it. Let's see what we think. We'll go through position by position, the 53, and give you your takeaways of how they formed this thing next on Grant and Danny.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks, the three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think wide receiver might look different. I'll be interested to see what happens in the quarterback room, if they truly want to keep Josh Johnson on this 53, or if he's a short holdover. I think keeping seven linebackers is interesting and certainly, you know, leaves some room for movement. You know, are they going to maybe add another D lineman somewhere in there? You know, certainly Cleveland Farrell getting cut is a guy who, you know, we've gotten used to seeing here in Washington, and Andre Jones was a draft pick last season. So a couple of names that, you know, folks might recognize a little bit, but.
That was Mitch Tischler of Monumental Sports. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan. So let's go through the initial 53 player roster. This is going to look different probably by this time tomorrow, certainly over the next few days. They can now start shopping because everybody else is releasing dozens of players officially into the open market. And now Washington gets to pick and choose what they want to do with their last few roster spots. But for the moment, three quarterbacks. I always had Josh Johnson in. I know very little attention was paid to the fact. It seemed like that Marcus Mariota was dealing with an Achilles.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how different that would have been. But it seemed like everyone just wanted to cut Josh Johnson and either go get someone from outside the building or roll with two. I'm team two quarterbacks if two quarterbacks are healthy. But when Mariota's done nothing all preseason on the field and very little on the practice field, and the word Achilles is just being thrown out there and he's not being asked to do anything, sorry, you have to have another guy.
That's where I'm at. Yeah, I mean, that to me, it's not necessarily about Daniels. This was a Mariota question, right, where eventually he'll be fine. I don't know when that is because, again, we haven't seen any sample that says he's good to go. And Josh Johnson now, to me, in week one, unless something changes, unless Mariota's health improves and he's able to get some reps, he's the guy that's a play away probably in week one.
Running back, no surprise here. Four. Eckler, Krosky Merritt, Chris Rodriguez, Jeremy McNichols. Chalk. No surprise. As soon as Robinson got traded, I think we all knew this is what it was going to look like. You could have maybe, just maybe said, okay, McNichols, just to save a roster spot somewhere else to the practice squad to start this thing, and we'll elevate him at the start of the year. But they like McNichols a lot. There's really no reason to get cute there.
I thought maybe a Hail Mary might be Kaz Allen for special teams, not necessarily to get work in with that group of four there. That was a long shot to me, but yeah, that's pretty much chalk, as you said.
You heard Mitch mention this. One of the big surprises, wide receiver. So more often than not in the league, you keep seven, not five. In fact, keeping six is kind of the normal number. Five receivers doesn't really work in this offense. And here's what I mean by that. They ran more no huddle than anybody in the league last year. In fact, they ran more no huddle last year than any team since the Eagles when Chip Kelly was coaching them several seasons ago as the fastest recent offense in league history. Their tempo was number one in the National Football League last season. What does that mean? That means that your receivers running routes are going to get fatigued and tired, and they're going to curl off and get to the sideline, and other guys are going to have to run on. Logan was actually talking about this on the Take Command show we did last night, where his point was he didn't think there was a time last year where they didn't use like at least six receivers to get some kind of snaps. This just screams to me they didn't feel like anybody else needed to be on this thing. Like, if we really are just talking about earning it, honestly, Luke McCaffrey's on because he was a third-round pick last year, pretty much. There was really four guys that truly earned it: McLaurin, Deebo Samuel, Noah Brown, Jalen Lane. And Noah and Terry didn't earn it by way of what they did in the last several weeks. Brown was hurt. McLaurin was holding out for a contract and then holding in just because of their track record.
Sure, previous deposits.
But yeah. McCaffrey's going to be in, so that's five. I've got a couple people, Instagram at Grant H. Paulson, DMing me and stuff, that are upset that Ja'Cory Brooks didn't make the team. He's going to be on the practice squad. I mean, no one's going to claim him. He's an undrafted free agent. If he would have had the entire camp like he had the first couple of days, or three preseason games like he had against the Patriots, maybe he would have been the sixth. But they feel better about some of the other veterans getting cut, and I totally understand that. I would bet on a sixth guy being added who will be ahead of McCaffrey, and we'll see, maybe ahead of Lane, depending on who it is, you know, on the depth chart when this thing's all said and done.
Yeah, there's going to be another Noah Brown, I think, at that position. Right, whether it's, you know, someone that gets cut or a small deal gets made, et cetera. I think they've made room for that player. Again, that is not a great a list of depth right there. I think there are three guys, really, that I'm – trust is the wrong word. Let me try to rephrase it. McLaurin, Samuel, and the upside of Jalen Lane is enticing. I like Noah Brown fine. How could you count on Noah Brown for 17 weeks, just given what we've seen here? And given what I mean, there's a reason he was available initially to Washington last year at this time. It's because of that track record of not being able to count on him week in and week out. And Luke McCaffrey hasn't shown a ton. I would anticipate another move is coming here sooner rather than later.
Now, if they kept a sixth, let me be clear, Obama style, Brooks was my guy. That would have been my choice over Osborne, Gallup, Moore, any of those veterans. Because you got to go young somewhere. Just once, please. Oldest team in the league. But they're going to go out and go the veteran route. No problem there. And if he's in the building, what's the difference? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he were to get claimed and you lose him, now we can have a conversation that you made a mistake. It just doesn't happen. Every team has the undrafted free agent that had a good camp that they like in their own building. Four tight ends. I thought this one was super easy and never really worth talking about. Ertz, Bates, Sinnott, Yankoff. Yankoff, people forget, was on the team for almost the entirety of last season and played a lot of special teams. No surprise there. I know you were really interested in tight end just based on not seeing a lot from Sinnott, but that doesn't change much in the way of, you know, who was going to be in or out.
Yeah, I didn't know if that meant something for Turner, who we found out, of course, subsequently was released, presumably a practice squad candidate there, but to see how that position would shake out.
Offensive line, they ended up keeping 9 because Cosme went to PUP. So at tackle, they're 5 deep, which is interesting. Now, Trent Scott can play guard as well, and so can Wiley, so that's why you keep 5 tackles.
Right.
Because those two guys are going to have, you know, multi-position flex. But Tunsil, you're starting left tackle with Connolly, presumably you're starting right tackle. Does Josh Connolly start and play every down against the Giants, or does he rotate with Andrew Wiley? We got to figure that out, because that's going to determine whether Allegretti's a starter in week 1 or not at right guard. Because I would think if Connolly's at right tackle without a rotation, then Wiley would start over Allegretti at right guard. But regardless, Tunsil, Connolly, Wiley, Trent Scott, George Fent, who they brought in here, all of those guys make the team as tackles, with Scott and Wiley being guard eligible. On the interior, Tyler Biadasz at center, Brandon Coleman, the starting left guard, Allegretti may start at right guard in week 1, and then survivor, Chris Paul. Year after year, it feels like he starts camp and you go, probably not this year. And then he has a good preseason, and he's back on the roster. Chris Paul still around as the last lineman in for Washington with Cosme to PUP, which means he will not play in the first 4 games.
So do you see Fant as maybe kind of that swing tackle role?
Definitely.
Yeah, like kind of why am I blanking on the guy's name? Ty Nsekhe role, right? Where he was never the plan, but somehow ends up playing 3 games at left tackle, 4 games at right tackle, part of different packages, etc.
I mean, that's just a job. Like, that's like,
yeah, that's a thing.
You know, being a utility infielder. I mean, mm-hmm. Everybody's got a swing tackle. You got to be a starting caliber third tackle, basically. Fant's played a lot in the NFL. I just thought when they brought him in, you don't bring him in a week before cutdown day to then release a guy with his resume. So I kind of had him in Sharpie anyway, and you were kind of working around him. To the defensive side of the ball, they go with 90 linemen. You and I were wondering, would they keep 10, and they didn't. Defensive ends, well, let me clarify. If you count Von Miller on the D-line, for bookkeeping purposes, for the NFL, because of the number he's wearing, he actually has to be listed as a linebacker. Isn't that weird?
Yes.
Because he's not allowed, for whatever reason, to be a defensive end with his number. So, like, on all the stuff the team puts out, he's listed as a linebacker. But regardless, he's a D-end. We all know that. So it's Armstrong, Dietrich Wise, Von Miller, Jacob Martin, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste. 5 defensive ends. Then 4 defensive tackles with Deron Payne, Javon Kinlaw, Johnny Newton, and Eddie Goldman. Most interesting thing here was that Goldman made it. I had him out. I thought he just kind of struggled in the preseason and didn't provide the size or the you know, frankly, the push against, you know, interior linemen in the running game that I was hoping for. Didn't anchor as well as I would have liked. But maybe that's coming, and maybe he's just kind of working his way into the fold here.
So I thought there'd be 10. I thought they were going to go with 10. It's just kind of given the system, scheme, design, et cetera, the idea of having bigger guys up front. Well, bigger guys tend to tire a little more quickly a lot of times than their smaller counterparts, right? And you have situational type players like I don't want Von Miller out there on first down. I don't think they do either. Now, 2-minute drill is a different story, but the idea that you would have a lot of Frankie Louvu downhill, Von Miller downhill, et cetera, that's fine, but Miller's not there on first and second, taking on, you know, pulling guards and getting double teamed by fullbacks and tight ends and tackles, et cetera. So there's only 4 interior defensive tackles. I thought they'd have 5, again, to kind of keep that rotation going. So that was interesting to me. I thought Goldman would make it despite, as you said, a lackluster preseason. So I thought maybe you'd have somebody else there who maybe could play both, et cetera.
Well, here's where the extra body goes is linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
When you keep 6 linebackers, there's your 10th defensive lineman.
Right.
So you're debating between maybe a Carl Davis or a Jalen Holmes or somebody like that, or Ale Kaho, who I'm thrilled made the roster. But Wagner and Louvu, your starting linebackers. McGee, next man up. Rookies, Kane Medrano and undrafted Kaho, both from UCLA. Ale started his college career at Alabama. And then Nick Ballore, who's a special teams ace. It's really 5 linebackers with Ballore, just almost exclusively teams. He's not going to play on the defensive side of the ball. Corners, no surprises. The only question was, were they actually going to trade Igbinoghene after the Rossini report today? They didn't. Lattimore, Amos, Sanristil, Jonathan Jones, and Noah Igbinoghene. And then safety felt like one of the easiest positions to predict the entire camp. They're pretty deep there, actually. Quan Martin and Will Harris start. Jeremy Reeves and Percy Butler off the bench. Tyler Owens, bunch of special teams, maybe very minimally. defense. And then your specialists, Way, Gay, and Ott. You got Tress, Matt Gay, and Tyler Ott. So there's your 53-man roster for Washington.
Again, the questions or the quote-unquote issues, and I don't know how deep you want to go on that, it's the back of the roster stuff. You know what I mean? It's the, like, who's their sixth receiver?
Isn't that always the case?
It's
normally not who's the at the start of the roster.
Well, it's more so some years going, who the hell are they going to give the ball to? Who the hell is going to start here? It's now I'm like, who's the backup center among that group? Like, who do I feel most comfortable with? They're in a pretty good spot in terms of what they've done over last season plus.
All right, I'll pose this question to you when we return, and I want to hit the phones on this. Let's open up the lines, guys. 800-636-1067 for you now. Your favorite decision that they made? And the least favorite decision that they made. Like the guy that you're pumped that got in, or something you're happy that they did, and then something that you wish they would have done differently. 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
I think the more I think about it, you mentioned the tempo stuff. I think you just need bodies for this. I don't think there was a game last week they didn't have, or last year they didn't have at least six guys up, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, just need somebody that you feel comfortable with and you can trust. And I think about how they signed Noah Brown last year on the cut day and what a tremendous addition he was. So again, I think that speaks to Adam Peters' talent and how his staff is working to kind of always find the best version of this roster. Think back to last year, how fastidious and detailed they were about cultivating a practice squad that had people that could play football for you. And so I think that's what they're going to do, is find someone to fill that role. And I think hopefully KJ Osborne's on the practice squad and he's here and he's part of the organization. But that feels like a position where there might be a little bit of movement heading from Tuesday to Wednesday.
That's Logan Paulson from the Take Command podcast that I do with him as we predicted the roster yesterday. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, live on The Fan. The 53-man roster is set. We're asking you right now, what decision did you really like, and what that the team didn't you like? You can call us at 800-636-1067, and we'll get you on the air to banter with us about this first version. This is the first draft, people. There will be many other drafts, including, I bet, another one they turn into the teacher tomorrow that looks slightly different. But some just quick blush thoughts. One of the big stories, three quarterbacks with Josh Johnson in. I think that goes against the grain from the last several days, at least the narrative of what was going to happen. Only five wide receivers with Luke McCaffrey last in. Nobody else made it. And on the defensive side of the ball, six linebackers with Ali Kehoe being kind of the last guy in, maybe, earned his way as an undrafted free agent, the only player to do so this time around for Washington. Pretty good story. So, Danny, that's my favorite thing that happened. Kehoe, who had a great preseason, who started camp as just a dude that I didn't know, and most people were like, who's number 51? Oh, that's a decent little play. By the end of the preseason, he was their most noticeable defender in the second half of all their games, and they put him on the roster.
My favorite thing that happened, and I like yours, by the way, my favorite thing is they left room for that receiver to be named later, right? And so whether you kept Ja'Cory Brooks or not, you still can make moves in that regard, but to me, that's the incomplete. I'm turning this into my professor, but letting him know, hey, I've got another thing to add to that, or I have another quote or something like that. That to me is kind of leaving the option open. The thing I didn't like is the center spot. Biadasz is awesome, but last year you had a guy play 25 or almost 26% of the snaps over the course of the season, and Michael Dieter. He didn't make the roster. He got cut. I don't know what the answer is there. I don't know if that's, again, a TBD or someone's going to go, I also play center kind of fill it in.
Allegretti played center all camp, right? So that's kind of their plan, is he'll be backup guard, backup center. He'd be their center two right now. But to your point, there's not a lot of depth there. I mean, right. If he's going to play guard, now you do have an issue. My guess is this means that Wiley plays right guard against the Giants and Connor Lee is going to start and play full-time?
If I had to bet on that, yeah. But, you know, listen, I'm not telling you Dieter's someone to write home about, but I'm telling you that he played a bunch last year and that offense was pretty good. So I don't know that I would have rocked the boat as much there. Adding a bonus one. Sheldon Day didn't make it. I think he played the third most snaps after Jonathan Allen was hurt for this defense last year as a guy that was kind of a stalwart in the middle. He didn't make the team. That's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I don't think he was the reason they couldn't stop the run, but they probably look back to last year and go, you played a lot last year.
And we couldn't stop the run.
At a position where we really struggled, you know, and they feel like Eddie Goldman's size gives them more. But I just didn't think Goldman stood out in any way that was overly noticeable this summer. He's a local guy. It's a cool story. He's retired a couple of times or been out of football for a season, however you want to phrase it, a couple times over, and he's still kicking. So I like that. I like seeing that he is squarely in the mix at the start of the year as a story. I wouldn't have predicted that, or it's probably not the route I would have gone in. Something that I did not like, I guess for me, there's nothing that bothers me.
There's nothing I hate, to be honest with you.
Maybe in one of these spots, I would have liked to have gone a little younger. You know, where you kept an extra veteran, could have been the D-line. Could have been in the secondary. You could have kept one of the kids if they were able to trade like Igbinoghene or something, even though I think their corner depth is really good, and I like Noah Ai in his role. But maybe that's not even a cut-down day thing, frankly. But the depth for this team in a lot of spots feels older. And wide receiver could be the symbolism of this, mm-hmm. where if you kept Brooks as the wide receiver 6, he's a lot younger than maybe whoever you're going to bring in here. How much does that guy really matter? You're the 6th receiver. Now, depending on who they bring in, if it's Noah Brown from last August 28th, he became their number 2 receiver very fast. So we'll see who they bring in. But I just wish they weren't so old everywhere.
Yeah. And it's not as if their backups, and I know it's not a fair sample exactly, but it's not as if they were beating other teams' backups up pretty good in these preseason games. They're getting steamrolled. The guys that are going to play at times for this team, you know, weren't necessarily turning heads and knocking people into the dirt. So it's one of those things where if you're not getting dominant play from your 2s and 3s, I'd kind of default to going young there, if possible. I see your point.
I got a tweet here. I'm at Grant H. Paulson on social. Danny's at Funny Danny. And somebody says, if we played tomorrow, I'd be scratching my head. It appears the 6th wide receiver, he goes on to talk about the receiver position. So important to remember, they don't play tomorrow. And I'm not even saying that flippantly. But I think that's how people think is, well, if there was a game tomorrow, this is not a good situation.
Yeah, you're not locked into this.
They are absolutely going to have another receiver joining this building, this room. And by the way, let's say they don't, then you know what they would do if they played tomorrow? In the morning, they would be activating, or calling up, I should say, you know, Ja'Cory Brooks to their roster from the practice squad. And voila, now you've got your 6th receiver. So I know sometimes it feels strange to say it that way, but it's August 26th. They play on September 7th. This is fluid. We're looking at a snapshot of a much larger collection of images here. Every day at 5 this week, we are preparing you guys for fantasy football drafts. If you're not into fantasy football, that's cool too. It's just a way to talk about a lot of different players and their projections going into the season. But today we're focusing on running backs in the NFL with Jake Seeley. We'll do that next on Grant and Danny.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The 3 conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.